Let's see what the stew has in store for us today.
Welcome to the Gnomecast, Gnome Stew's Tabletop Gaming Advice Podcast. Here we talk with the other gnomes about gaming things to avoid becoming part of the stew, so I guess we'd better be good. This episode is brought to you by awesome Patreon backers like the superlative Sam G, the astounding Amadeo Rosa, and the dubious Doug Roz. Today, we have me, Ange, along with Josh and JT, and we are going to talk about what to do when real life has the audacity to get in the way of us playing and running our games. I mean, the nerve. Before we dive into that main topic, though, we're going to ask our Get to Know a Gnome question. What is the largest number of concurrent campaigns you've been involved in at once? Josh, I'm going to start with you.
Okay. Discounting one-shots and playtests, I think I've actually kept up a pretty consistent rotation of being like three campaigns in at one time. I started as like two alternating Sunday games, Pathfinder First Edition and the Fantasy Age First Edition. And then we kind of folded in a monthly Starfinder game on Saturdays. And then ironically, it actually took a slight dip during the pandemic when we went down to just a Pathfinder 1E game and a Pathfinder 2E game. But then it jumped up again. The same First Edition Pathfinder game, but then we had two alternating 2E games on Monday. And now we're back down to two, but we are soon to be starting up a short Mothership campaign for the in-between arcs on Mondays, and that will transition into a Starfinder 2E campaign when a couple source books come out. And despite Pathfinder 1E being my most consistent system throughout all of that, throughout the last decade, I actually don't really like Pathfinder 1E all that much. But I love the people at the table, and that's what keeps me coming back. Also, I have said 2E so many times right now that it does not sound like words anymore. Okay.
It doesn't mean anything anymore.
It means nothing to me anymore. And what about you?
I think the most I have ever had at once, player and GM combined, was 9. This was probably around 2022, because I'm kind of the exact opposite. We hit the pandemic, and I went work from home, and my schedule changed. For the prior nearly 15 years before the pandemic, I was in kind of a B shift person, so working like dinner time to about 2 a.m. So that cut out a lot of opportunities for gaming. And then the pandemic hits, my schedule shifts to whenever I want to work, and I realized I could start gaming online with more people since all gaming was happening online. And around 2022, I think those 9, I was mostly a player. I had one occasional monthly game, one short-term weekly Monday game. We were playing Vaesen, a Wednesday two-hour game where we were kind of playing a Fate D&D mashup thing of old characters doing a prequel. It was very loose. And then I had alternating Thursday games, and every other week Friday game, and two alternating Saturday games. The alternating Saturday games are my main group that I've been gaming with for almost, in some variation or another, for 20 years. So we reached the point where we had too many people for one game, and we decided to split in two and just alternate which Saturday which group played on. But there's like 5 of us that are in both groups. So I will say the most I have ever run at the same time was 4, and that was last year, and that's too much. I'm not doing that again.
That's rough. I don't think I could do that now.
No.
Yeah.
I've run 2 at the same time, and it was a lot to keep track of.
Yeah.
Currently I have 3 in that rotation. So, and that's too much. I have one that'll be wrapping up this June, but we'll see. JT, what about you?
So way back in the wonderful days of the early to mid-90s, I had two roommates, Chris and Jason, and we actually met via role-playing games, which is a whole nother backstory I'm not going to get into. One was a little stalker action on my part at a Walden Books, B. Dalton. I would literally stand at the role-playing game section and wait for somebody to walk up and like glance at a book, and I'd pounce. I'd be like, do you play role-playing games? Because I was looking to build a group, looking for players. And fortunately, Jason, as cool as he was one of those people. And he was like, yeah, I'm looking for a D&D group. I just moved here from California. I was like, sweet, gotcha. And I latched onto him and I never let go.
Listeners, the 90s were a very different time. Do not yes. try this now, please.
No, you'll get shivved. But things got so wild with our various campaigns with three role players as roommates. I bought the little pocketed binders like you file paperwork away in to keep the character sheets and campaign notes together. Each GM was responsible for their own notes because we didn't want to file the super secret GM plans with the character sheets in case a character or a player wanted to look at their character sheet. We didn't want to expose them to those notes. So every GM was responsible for their own goods. And then shockingly enough, maybe not shocking at all, I made a spreadsheet to track all the campaigns, who was running the campaign, what players were involved, what their characters were, a little bitty note on like the status of each campaign, like stopped in room B4 or whatever it was, right? Just a phrase to kind of kickstart us on the next session. And we were gaming 4 to 6 times a week for anywhere from 3 hours ago to 10 hours at a go. The longer sessions were usually on the weekends. Actually, they were almost always on the weekends, unless it was like Memorial Day or Labor Day or something like that. And we had our morning game and our afternoon/evening game, and we always made sure it was two different GMs. So one GM would run for 4.5, maybe 5 hours. We'd take a break for lunch, get back together. GM number two would resume their game for the afternoon-evening time. But I think the concurrent campaign count got in the high 20s, and that may be a low estimate. That may be a low estimate. And this is across all the same players. I'm trying to think, did we have any like people that rotated in and out? And I don't think we did. This was all the same people, just different campaigns, different GMs. A couple of people didn't want to run games at all, which was cool. They were great players. So these 20 some odd, almost 30 some odd campaigns were rotating between about 4 or 5 different GMs.
Were they all the same system?
Oh, no. This was every system under the sun you can imagine. At least from the early to mid 90s. So this is before D&D 3 was released. The big D&D version was second edition at that time. Cyberpunk was huge. World of Darkness was blowing up. Hole, we played Hole, which is just HOL.
Oh, geez.
Which is a human occupied landfill, which is like a planet that's nothing but a landfill. And it's like a dystopian kind of thing. We actually had a long running campaign on Hole. And Hole is like a 32-page book with no supplements.
Readers, the 90s were a different time. I do not recommend reading Hole right now.
Yeah, it was definitely a different beast, but we had so much fun with it. We had our own game system that if we wanted something light and easy, we called it Bullshit. And it was half a page of rules. At the start of every session, you got a D6 and a penny. So this is the first time I'd ever seen metacurrency. I didn't even know what the word metacurrency was. And what it was is you try to do something that's opposed or is difficult, like climbing a wall, jumping over a chasm, swinging your sword, whatever it is. You and the GM both roll a D6. Ties go to the player. If you lose the roll and you happen to have a penny on hand, you can call bullshit and throw the penny to the GM and you win the die roll. And then the GM, when he loses his die roll, if he has a penny in hand or multiples in some cases, he can throw a penny to the player, call bullshit. And he wins the die roll. And that's it. That is the entire mechanics of the game system. And we played that all the time, because it was so light and easy, and we could do any genre we wanted. There was no equipment list. There's no character sheets. There's no nothing. It was great. It was great.
That's wild.
Yeah.
That is like my retirement home dream, that whole setup there. Like,
yeah.
Yes, please. Yeah. Thank you.
But these days, I'm down to one game. One weekly, every Saturday, we get together at 1 p.m. We knock off sometime between 7, 8, 9, 10 p.m. That's it. One GM, one campaign, one character. That's all we have time for these days.
You say that like a smoker who's down to one pack a day.
Moving on into the main topic. As you just heard, many of us started playing role-playing games when we were kids. For young adults, and those golden summer days of childhood or college where responsibilities were few and we could game as long as we liked whenever we wanted. Or at least that's what the rose-colored glasses remember. Most of us are well past those years, though, and as we've often said here on the Gnomecast or in Gnomestew articles, we all have to juggle real-life responsibilities with scheduling our time playing RPGs. So let's talk about some of the situations we've dealt with and cover some advice on how to try and keep gaming happening during those busy times in our lives. To start this off, what's the longest break you've ever had where you couldn't play RPGs? JT, I'll start with you.
All right. So for me, it was a 2-year period. I just needed to reset my life. It had nothing to do with role-playing games. This actually terminated that period of life where I had the two roommates and the 20, almost 30-something games going on all at once. I was still living in my hometown where I was born and raised and going nowhere fast. The economy was so depressed, there was a waiting list to get a job at McDonald's. It was that bad. It's pretty atrocious. So after running out of jobs and money and all that, I packed up everything I owned, which was mostly novels, role-playing books, and my computer, and a few clothes. Let's not forget the clothing. And I moved from Midland, Texas to San Antonio, Texas, and moved in with my mom and stepdad, where I had an open invite to come live with them if I needed to, because they knew how horrible Midland was getting. While there, I lived in San Antonio for a year while rebooting my life. Did no gaming there. Kind of no gaming. I was playing MUDs online, so that's gaming. Mm. But it wasn't in-person tabletop RPGs, right? So it's a little different.
It's also a little more freeform. I'll talk about that a little bit when I get to my section.
Yeah, there you go. And for the younger folks, imagine WoW that's text-based, and if you want to kill the troll, you literally have to type kill troll and hit enter. You got to learn how to type really fast to survive. Anyway, while living in San Antonio, fell in love with a woman who I was playing MUDs with, but she was in Montana going to college. I was in San Antonio and just had a just regular old job. So one thing led to another, and I landed in Montana for a year. While there, we got married, and after she graduated college, we moved to Colorado Springs, where we live today. During this year in San Antonio, in a small town in Montana, I did no in-person gaming at all. I was just too busy rebooting my life and falling in love to find a group or make a group. But once we got settled in Colorado Springs, my very first stop was to the oldest gaming store in town to find a group. Sadly, Complete Gamer is now closed. The owner retired, and one thing led to another. The store had to close. But I hit their cork board, found a group, and I'm still great friends with two of those people that I found in the group, 28 years ago. So, yeah, in the intervening 28 years, I really haven't had more than 2 or 3 weeks without an RPG in my life since then.
What about you, Josh?
I don't know if I can top that, JT. That was great. Since I started playing in the 90s, I think my longest break was maybe a couple years in the late aughts and early teens. Like I was thinking about this question, trying to remember, and most of my memories around role-playing games are like linked to the places where I was playing them. The apartment that I was in, or the house that we were in, or you know, the dorm rooms or something like that. And I can't think of any place that I've ever lived where I wasn't playing in a campaign. Except for maybe late 20-aughts, early 20-teens. Maybe there was like a year or two there where like the groups that we're playing with, like a bunch of people had moved away and we had ended a campaign and a bunch of people had changed jobs. So it was kind of just like a shift, right? Like, and it just like, whoops, we forgot about this part. Other things were much more pressing. I think I got married in that point. We might have been playing in a game when I got married. Really don't remember because it's hard for me.
Ask your husband.
Yeah, it's hard for me to remember a time when I wasn't in a game of some sort.
That's actually really cool.
Yeah,
it's really good.
I mean, and the tables have changed. And there has been downtime in between, right? It's not like I can't say that like I haven't gone more than a couple of weeks without playing in a game. But as my memory compresses over the years. And the deep lore gets more and more compact. I think that there's been more time spent playing than not. And I consider that a win.
Ah, that deep lore.
Yeah. How about you, Ange? What about you?
So it's a little wibbly wobbly for me, but I don't know the exact time gaming in the 90s stopped because my college group, I call it college group. None of us were in college at that point, but a bunch of us shared a house. You know, we were all really close, but the primary GM was a little bit flaky. So usually a campaign would start, we'd play like half a dozen sessions and then nothing. And that was kind of the routine for most of the early 90s. And we played a bunch of different things, but somehow by 94, 95, it all just stopped. that's when I kind of found my fix on mushes, which are similar to muds, but they were more focused on the role-playing than the mechanical tactics type of fighting monsters things. It was more a lot of World of Darkness ones. There was a Shadow One run. There were some homebrew ones. And I learned how to type really fast, but it wasn't because I was fighting the monsters. It was because I was writing what my character was saying.
There you go.
I learned how to write during that time period. That was pretty much like 94, 95 to some point in the early 2000s. In the early 2000s, I made the switch from mushes to playing EverQuest. And while on EverQuest, I met some folks who, you know, I became friends with. And we probably around 2001, maybe 2002, started doing an online D&D game. It was great characters. We all have fond memories of it. There was no voice chat. It was all typing at each other and using some sort of archaic interface to roll dice, look at maps, move our characters around. And that really kind of ignited the spark in me. And I knew that if I wanted to have gaming in my life, I was going to have to find a new group. And that's how in 2003, I basically started looking. I found a really awful GM. He had some great players. We eventually all defected, and that is the group I still game with today, just without the awful GM. So probably that was a span of about 7 to 8 years. When we look back on the freedom of youth with rose-colored glasses, did we actually have that much free time, or are we just putting a nostalgic spin on it?
I mean, for me, it's definitely both. I mean, I started gaming when I was in high school. It was at band camp. Someone was running a D&D game. I walked by the dorm room that they were in, and they were like, hey, you want to try this? And I was like, okay, sure. And then I was kind of like hooked. But like, you know, we got the books and we started our own campaign, and we played all throughout high school. But like, I honestly don't remember that we were very consistent with it. Like, I remember being consistently involved in the hobby, buying books, reading books, planning sessions, but I can only really remember playing like a handful. I'm sure it was more than that, but that's what sticks in my head. We had all that time. Yeah, but did we like utilize it? Probably not. College was definitely different because it was all communal living and dorms, and you know, we were big nerds and didn't have anything else to do. I hope that my father doesn't hear that, because he helped pay for the majority of the time that I spent when I said I didn't have anything else to do. But in college, it was definitely longer marathons than we play now, right? Like in college, we could sit down, we could play for 6 or 7 hours and then go out to a diner afterwards and talk about the game that we had and what we think is going to happen in the next session. And then like the next day, you know, play for another 4 hours or something like that. As great as that sounds, it also sounds exhausting now.
I think that's one of the keys there, because it is definitely both. There were fewer responsibilities, but those responsibilities still existed in our jobs we'd have as young adults, college, schoolwork, all of that, family functions. You know, these things all still existed. But when you combine a different set of responsibilities and the endurance of youth.
Yeah.
That I think is where it really comes in, is because, you know, in my 20s, we could play for 6-7 hours at a time and then do the midnight run to Perkins and still chat right. for another 2 or 3 hours
before
going home and then getting up the next morning to go to our part-time jobs.
We would play games at the drop of a hat, right? Like, we'd go and see, like, Underworld came out when I was in college, and we came back and we're like, oh my God, that movie was awesome. Let's play a World of Darkness game right now. And then, like, there spend the next, you know, 5 hours, like, 2 hours rolling up characters, and then another like improvising, you know, a one-shot campaign or something like that. And we would do that.
Yeah, exactly.
It's so often for so many different reasons. And now it's like you have to have a degree in project management in order to get people over 30 together for a role-playing game.
Yep. No rose-colored glasses for me. I really and truly did have that much free time because we didn't have to go anywhere to game. We were already there. I mean, sure, two, three, four of our players had to come to our house, but Midland at the time, to get from one end to the far other end was a 20-minute drive, maybe, around there somewhere. So most people were within 5 to 10 minutes worth of drive time to get to our place. And we knew when we were starting, so we'd have everything set up and ready to go. And at the end of one session, we'd be like, what are we playing next? So the GM could be mentally prepared and we could get the right characters out and all that good stuff. So as people walked in the door, they got their character sheets and off we went.
Yeah.
But yeah, I had no college. No, I was college aged, but I didn't go to college in my youth. I didn't do college until my 30s. But yeah, no college, no school, no wife, no kids. You know, 40-ish hours a week at the job. You know, in the non-work hours, hey, that's 128 hours each week for those of you doing the math at home. We're dedicated to role-playing games and a minimal amount of sleep. So that's a lot of role-playing we got in every week.
Again, it's that endurance.
Yeah.
I will say, though, that I would not trade what I have now for that endurance and that freedom I have then, because the quality of the games I play today are so much better than what I played in the 80s and 90s.
Oh, I totally agree. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's not necessarily the game's fault, and it's not necessarily the player's fault. It's just my tastes have refined over the years, and the skills of the players and the GMs have had time to, shall we say, marinate.
There you go. Yes.
You know, I'm not going to argue with you, Ange, but I am going to take a different perspective on that. And that is to say that, like, the quality of the friendships that I made at those tables has stayed consistently good.
Yes.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, there's a difference in, like, the quality of the systems or, you know, in our experience as players. But the, like, how close I got to the people sitting around that we were rolling dice with is consistently top notch.
Oh, yeah. I'll admit the 90s college age group that I played with that petered out, I am still friends with all of those people today.
Oh, yeah.
I do Christmas Eve with most of them and their children.
Nice.
I consider their children like my nieces because we are that close. We just didn't game together anymore.
I had this other thought while I was listening to JT talk. And, like, I know, JT, you said that you played, like, every game under the sun. But I started thinking back, and in college, right, like, there were two systems that I played, World of Darkness and D&D 3, not even 3.5, it was just 3. And I wonder if that had anything to do with our ability to just, like, play at the drop of a hat. Because we already had the system mastery. We could roll up a character in, like, less than 30 minutes, and we could just dive in and get going. And I kind of see that in some of the other, like, people that, like, maybe strictly play 5e. I know sometimes, like, us experienced, you know, there's more out there than 5e guys, but, like, there's something to be said for, like, just having one system that you know so well that you can just go off and play. And most of that was because we couldn't afford more systems because at the time.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I do think you have a point there. And I see this a lot in various discussion groups where people are resistant to playing other games because they are comfortable with what they know and understand about the games they're already playing. And since 5e is kind of the juggernaut right now, that's the one most people are comfortable with and unwilling to try something else because they are comfortable with. And as you said, they can make their next character at the drop of the hat. They can start their next campaign super easily because they know all of the fiddly mechanical bits that they need to have in place.
Yep.
Yeah. I don't know if it's an important observation, but I guess if there are people that are, like, looking for the halcyon days of their youth and how quickly they could put a campaign together, maybe that's something to think about.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a lever you can pull. I don't know.
I did that once at a Texas rest stop. We drove about an hour and a half to another town for a Battletech tournament. On the way back, Mike's car overheated and we barely managed to roll into a rest stop that had no cover. This was middle of summer in Texas, West Texas. Oh my God, it was hot. But it had a picnic bench picnic table with two benches. So we piled out of the car and sat down at the picnic bench. We happened to have pencils, paper, and D&D dice with us, which, you know, weren't required for the Battletech, but we always traveled with those dice. So while we're waiting for the car to cool off so we can continue the trek home and then figure out what's wrong with the car later, I had Jason and Mike roll up two characters. I ran them through a dungeon that I just kind of did theater of the mind.
Yeah.
And we knew that gosh, this was D&D second edition. We knew that fighter with an 18 strength gets the percentage, and that these different percentages give you different bonuses. We had all the stats memorized and what bonuses or penalties you got depending on how high or low you rolled for your stats. We just knew it so well. There was that comfort thing, and we didn't have books with us. We just had pencils, blank paper, and dice, and we entertained ourselves and got sunburned like you wouldn't believe over the course of about 3 hours. And the car was long cooled down before we were done, but we still hung out there and finished out the little dungeon that I had imagined in my head.
Wow.
That's awesome.
So, bringing it closer to our modern lives, when we are super busy, what are some techniques that we use to keep gaming in our life, even during those everything else is going crazy times?
So for me, reading fiction fills the well for me. And by the way, audiobooks counts as reading. I know some people say, no, it's not text on a page. It can't be reading. Sorry, you're consuming fiction. It counts as reading.
Fight me on it.
Yeah, fight me on it. Exactly. So consuming, let's put it this way, consuming fiction in any mini media fills the well for me. I glean ideas, concepts for both my role-playing experiences and my own fiction writing from consuming a wide variety of fiction. I read up pretty much everything but romance because it just doesn't do anything for me.
I was going to make an off-color comment there about
There you
what
go.
romance doesn't do for you, but we'll move on.
But I also read role-playing books to see what new and neat ideas come out of those books. It can be anything from world-building to settings, characters, situations, neat combos of things, mechanics, anything you can find in a role-playing book. I love reading them. Even if I have no intent of playing or running the game, I like consuming them. I also listen to a few RPG-related podcasts while driving, along with my short fiction podcasts as well. I have a complete list of what I listen to on my website. There will be a link to that in the show notes so folks can see what I listen to while I drive.
I'm pretty similar to JT. Like I'll read new rule books for fun. I'll scroll through, drive through RPG or something like that, see what's new that I haven't heard about. I will probably look at way too many Kickstarters or, listening to APs, listening to podcasts, just all of that stuff to like keep at least a toe dipped into the hobby and see what people are talking about, see what people are doing. But then the other thing that I like to add into that is I will share those links with my friends, or like, hey, there's this really cool thing in this rule book. Look at this. Or, I will slowly like disseminate the information so that maybe it puts the bug in their ear too. And then eventually that will develop and then the game will get going again somehow. I have a friend who I will we constantly share like Kickstarter links back and forth for new games for properties that we like. That's how I found out about the Stormlight RPG for the first time. And yeah, that works really well because hey, isn't this cool? It wouldn't be fun to play this. Oh, you backed it? Oh, well, you spent the money on it, so I guess we got it now.
Right? Oops.
All those things are absolutely perfect. I think the key is keeping your imagination going, keeping your mind thinking about the possibilities and the potential in playing the games and creating the characters and running the games and keeping the world going. I also think there's a point of figure out what you can fit in. I have a friend who, when they started having kids, their gaming group kind of dissolved just out of, not because of the kids, but just because of general people were moving on to different jobs in other parts of the country, and their gaming group fell apart. With the kids, they found that their best way to get some gaming in were some conventions. The grandparents would take the kids for 2 weekends a year, and they would do Origins and Yukon. And it basically gave them that opportunity to play, keep their toe in the hobby, but still stay focused on everything else with, kids and family and jobs and all of that. I think it's important for us to also note that there is more we get from RPGs than just the fun of playing. There is community and social mental health benefits from getting together and playing, and trying to keep even just a little bit of that in your life when you're busy can be very therapeutic for you. Even if it's a once a month game, you need to figure out how to be realistic with your time and maybe don't be the one running the game. Let somebody else run the game.
There you go.
Sharing role-playing memes with your group and your friends is the perfect example of that, Ange, because it's like, hey, remember that? Funny. We're laughing about the same thing. We are making a connection. We are a community. Again, we are friends. And it just reaffirms all of that, and it releases all the good endorphins.
Yep. And to keep your community going between sessions, especially if you have long breaks or a monthly game, or for me, a monthly game would be a long break, but that's me, right? But set up a Slack, a Discord, or whatever, where you can, between sessions, not just talk about the game, but talk to each other.
Yes.
We've got a Discord for our game group, and we have different channels. Like, we have Game Talk, we have General Chat, which is almost on every Discord, Loot, XP channels, so on and so forth. Some game-related channels. And then we have just, like, you know, share a meme. And everybody in our group, and there's eight of us in the group, am I counting right? Yeah, eight of us in the group. All of us work in technology, but one guy. So we share stupid tech memes, funny jokes around technology, new technology news, things of that nature. We have two rules: no politics, no religion, because we're there to be friends and not polarize one another.
It's a slight tangent to this topic, but it is more difficult for adults to make new friends.
Oh, yeah.
But we as gamers have a secret sauce there, because the secret to making friends is shared interests and time spent together. And even if that time spent together is in a chat room sharing goofy memes, it's still building that connection with like-minded people who enjoy the same things you do.
Yep.
And that is the key to having healthy friendships. Memes are not the key to having healthy friendships, but just sharing cool stuff with each other is the key to having healthy friendships into adulthood, after we've passed that point of being children who can look at another child and go, hey, want to be friends? Yeah, sure. Let's go play. It's like, you know, adults need a little more, social maneuvering there.
I did that as an adult in Beedalton. I'd stand at the role-playing game bookshelf. Oh, wait, I already talked about that.
Again, listeners, do not try this at all. Can I get real for just like 2 seconds? Like,
sure.
New Year's Eve, 2019 going over to 2020. We had a tradition in our Pathfinder 1 game that I talked about, where we would play a New Year's game, and we would, you know, play until everybody, because we were all across different time zones, and we play until the last time zone got into the new year. And that was the same day that my mother had a horrible heart attack. Now, I am on the opposite side of the country at that point, right? I'm on the West Coast, they're on the East Coast. And there was nothing I could do except wait for phone calls, either from my mom or from my dad or from whenever, right? On this game, like, I told them what was going on. Like, I don't know what's going on, but let's keep playing. I'll drop out whenever I need to drop out, but just, and so you know. And that game kept me sane that night. Those friends kept me together. I mean, my husband was there too. He was in the game, but like, and obviously he was a rock. But having more people that were just doing something normal that I could be a part of, and they like knew that I wasn't really going to be playing much, but I was still listening in on the chat and everything, it kept me together that night, and it got me through it.
That is very real and very powerful.
Yeah.
Moving on with the topic, do we have any advice for the forever GM who is finding themselves spread too thin and not able to keep up with the game or games they want to run?
Yeah, encourage someone else to run a game for a while, even if it's a one-shot or a two-shot or a three-shot, right? Just if you can't get a volunteer, step away for your own sanity and mental health. If you're not there and it's not helping you, like if it's not giving you spoons, don't do it. And if your group truly needs a game and you're not the one that can provide it in that moment, that someone else needs to strap on their big person boots and run a game for a while. Could be a few sessions, could be a few months, whatever. Set a time limit on it so people know they can expect to return to the quote-unquote main campaign after you get your break.
Mm-hmm.
I think we all put that down as our main advice here.
In one way or another, we did. Yeah.
Somebody else needs to run a game.
Yes.
The point is, like, the only way to solve burnout is to take a break and to step away. And like I know that people are like, no, I can push through. Like, no, like pushing through it just makes it worse. It's the only way to refill the well is to give yourself time to recuperate. Like, you got to take a long rest. And unfortunately, unlike in D&D, a long rest needs to be more than 8 hours. I have like a 5-year long one shot. About halfway through that, I was very frank with the group. I was like, we're at level 10. We could stop here. We got to a point in the story where we definitely could stop. I could keep running, but I needed a break between. And so we took a 4-month break. Everybody else like stepped up, tried running some one shots. We got to play a bunch of different systems that we had on our to be played pile. A couple of the people had never run games before, but they're like, yeah, we'll try a one shot. And then one of the people caught the bug.
Awesome.
So like a couple months later, even after we started back up, he approached me. He was like, hey, what would you feel about alternating story arcs? So like we'd play through one arc in my campaign and then we'd swap over to his game and we'd play through an arc. And that was like the best decision that I ever made because it saved me from burnout. We got to the end of my campaign and now we're playing his. And yeah, it's awesome.
My Saturday group, we have multiple GMs and we have been able to step in for each other when something else is going on. One player's father started having health issues. Somebody else stepped up to run so he could basically focus on family stuff. Another player happened to work for the Department of Health when COVID hit.
So they didn't have anything to do, right?
Yeah. It's like, no, you don't need to run. Right? You can stop running. We'll put your campaign on hiatus. Somebody else will run something. You know, it's like we do that for each other. I've had people do it for me. You know, it helps allow you to stay active with your group, but not always feel responsible for everyone's fun.
And some advice to support all of the what we just said. If you're a player in someone else's campaign and you want to be a GM or are a GM, but you're just in the player role for this particular campaign, be ready to step up because burnout can hit you like a sledgehammer out of nowhere. And mm-hmm. when the current GM pops up on Discord and says, guys, I need a break, be ready to step up. Have a game system in mind, have a setting, have a small adventure. Could be a one shot. Discuss it with the group. Say, are we doing a one shot? Are we doing a short campaign? Are we replacing the campaign? Whatever. There's a ton of options there. Just be prepared. Have something in your back pocket.
Yeah.
And surprise, surprise, I got a spreadsheet with a bunch of ideas of different campaigns I'd love to run and different game systems and settings and all that, right? So, yeah. And it's a Google Doc I can share that I have shared with the group. And it's got a little voting system in there so people can upvote and downvote and we can agree on what to do next pretty quickly.
One last reiteration on that particular part of this topic is if no one else is willing to run up, the group still needs to take a break because you as the GM cannot keep burning yourself out.
Yeah.
If the group doesn't play for 6 months, the group doesn't play for 6 months. You know, it's the airplane analogy. You have to put the face mask on yourself before you help anyone else.
Yep.
So if you're not taking care of yourself, the group, the game itself is going to fizzle.
And if you need to take a break, set a calendar reminder saying like, okay, in 6 months time, we were going to come back and we were going to revisit this. And, don't just say in 6 months, like write it down somewhere that is going to pop up and annoy you until you get back in touch with everybody.
So what about the person who has taken a break, has been out of gaming for a significant period of time, doesn't have an active group anymore? What do they do when they want to restart playing?
Visit your local gaming store, Google up, gaming store or role-playing game store. Make sure you go to a store that sells tabletop games, not video games. But most have a cork board with notices posted. Quite a few have shifted their cork boards to a virtual cork board, a Discord server, something similar to that. But they'll have like a QR code by the register. Scan this, join the Discord server. And most have a looking for group or even multiple looking for group channels. I want to play D&D. I want to play World of Darkness. I want to play Fate. I want to play whatever, right? A well-organized game store Discord server will have a ton of options. Pop in, don't be shy, say, hey, I am a long-term player of this, or I'm a new player to that, I want to play, is there a group that I can join, or can we build a group? So there you go, and I'm sure there's some online sites that can help you find a gaming group. I have no personal recommendations, though, because I haven't needed one for like a quarter century. I'm old.
Yeah, I would add to that there are online communities that you can look for. For some people, it may feel safer to engage with an online community than going into a game store, where they can basically maybe find an online game of people that are, what's the word I'm looking for? People that they can feel like they can engage with a little more.
Sure.
Rather than strangers in a store. It's like, real people are scary sometimes. I would also say, reach out to the people you used to play with. Some of them might be interested in playing again. Some of them might have a seat in a game that's currently going on. You can always reach out, rekindle those friendships. See if there's something there for you.
And another thing that you can do is, if you've got like an actual play or like a YouTube channel, like review channel or something like that, they probably got a Discord too, and I guarantee that they've got looking for group channels.
Mm-hmm.
The great thing about going through from an AP fandom or something like that, you know that the people that are in that group are like the same sort of style of game that you do, because they're fans of the podcast or the AP or the, you know, the stream or whatever.
Before we get out of here, any final advice for our listeners on life play balance?
Shared Google calendars. I cannot stress enough how good it is. So that long running Pathfinder 1 campaign that I talked about, there's a calendar just for those sessions. And like every other Sunday, it shows up on my calendar. We cancel sessions all the time. We move them around. We, you know, like stuff happens, but having that initial plan means that we're not coming to the end of the session like, okay, well, when's everybody free in the next couple weeks, sort of thing. Having it already planned out there and already on the calendar and already like quote unquote official makes it so much easier to keep up the momentum of a regular game.
I would also say, be gentle with yourself. It is okay to pull back when other facets of your life are ramping up. Every single gamer I know that has started a family has had to pull back to a degree until their family regains some sort of equilibrium.
Mm-hmm.
Especially our childbearing gamers who have, had to take on the lion's share of the responsibility for the kids. It can take a little while to find yourself able to get back into playing games, but it is okay. You need to be kind to yourself and, you know, focus on the things you need to focus on.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, because real life loves to rear its ugly head, roll it at 20, and slam you down when you least expect it. It's okay. It happens, right? Give yourself grace. Don't beat yourself up, because real life is doing that for you.
Yeah.
Just chill, and if you need to step away, step away. And if your group makes you feel guilty because you need to step away, maybe it's time for a new group. Your friends don't beat you down. They lift you up.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be there to support you during your rough time, not give you grief because you're not entertaining them on Saturday afternoons.
Exactly.
Yeah, well said.
This show is funded by the Gnome Soup Patreon. You too can Patreon backer by following the Patreon link on the Gnome Soup website to the Gnome Soup Patreon. We love doing this, and our patrons help us keep it going. The Gnomecast is part of the Polygamers Podcast Network. So if you're enjoying us, here's another show to check out.
Pandas Talking Games. I remembered to say the title of the podcast this time. Charming, longtime gamers talking about tabletop role-playing games and making outtakes. Join Pandas, Phil, and Senda every other Wednesday answering listener questions about playing, running, and designing TTRPGs. It's like car talk, but for your games. I'm old enough to get that reference.
I don't, but I've been saying it for probably a couple of years now. Anyway, you can find all of us at gnomestew.com along with some other social media sites. Gnomes, is there anything else you want to give a shout out to today?
All right. So there's a Kickstarter that, when you hear this, if you listen to it on day of drop, you'll have like 9 or 10 days to jump on the Kickstarter. It's called Just Dice. And that's all it is. It's dice. There's no books. There's no settings. There's no nothing. Basically, if you're of the appropriate age to need a colonoscopy, then you need these dice. They're high vision dice. They're no larger than regular dice, so they're not like the giant dice that are going to dent your table. They're not made of metal, so they're not going to dent your table. But the color contrast on these dice are phenomenal and make them supremely legible for older folks like me.
Feel very called out.
Yeah, but also seen somehow.
Yeah. So the dice are aesthetically pleasing, but the contrast is superb. They're not fancy. They're not marbled or striped or speckled or anything like that that gets in the way of obfuscating the numbers. It's just dice. And they're the sharp edge dice, not the tumbled Ooh. Dice. So think back to the old school dice or the Vegas style dice. They're all sharp edged. So they literally roll more fair than the tumbled dice, because the act of tumbling dice puts weird surfaces on the die that make them tend to like a number better than another. So yeah. And the link will be in the show notes.
Awesome. Josh.
Okay, this is a novel that is coming out in May. It's called Make Me Better by Sarah Gailey. It's kind of a modern folk horror, subtle supernatural stuff going on, but the real horror is what like these cult is doing on this secluded island. I got to read an advanced copy of it, and it is amazing. And if you like horror or you like being scared, I highly recommend you go check it out.
Awesome. Also in novel news, T. Kingfisher has written a prequel about Astarion from Baldur's Gate 3. And pre-orders are going to be happening now. I believe they're now.
I think they're now. They announced the cover. I pre-ordered the Audible because I read books with my ears more often than I do with my eyes.
There you go.
I'm very curious about this one because Astarion is one of the best characters to come out of video games in a very long time.
The voice actor reads the audiobook.
Nice. That's even better.
That's a score right there. That is spot on.
So do you think this episode was good enough to keep you out of the stew, or do we need to take a little break?
Yeah, I think we need to take a little break.